Good evening. This is Howard K. Smith. That voice belongs to a member of the Beat Generation, to a young man on the road to making a search for himself. This is a collective portrait painted in words by the subjects themselves. Like all portraits, the composite effect depends in large degree on the angle of vision of the artists. We attempt tonight to present you with a picture of the era in which we have lived since the end of the Second World War, a picture drawn by those in revolt against some of the aspects of the hidden revolution. For this is an impression of the Cool Rebellion, a study of the Beat Generation.
Everybody seems to think it's so important that you have to grab for money all the time, you know. Seems to be the main goal in everybody's life. And my parents don't seem to be any the happier for it. In fact, they're always arguing and they're always discontent, you know. They want more than they have. They have a nice home. It's not paid for. They have a car. They have furniture and all that, but all they don't enjoy anything. They just sit home night after night, and they keep thinking about what a rut they're in, but they don't do anything to get out of it. And I'm going to see if I can't build myself kind of a life where I can really enjoy things, you know, and not be glued to one spot. I don't mean, you know, fly here and there, but be able to not be so stuck on the material possessions, you know, so that I can't leave them and go someplace else.
We find we can do about immense quantities of goods that would tie us to jobs we hate or would become jobs that we hated if we had to have them to pay off things, do you see? Now, there's one trap right there, strictly Squaresville. They accept it as their lot. This is life in Squaresville, as I see it. I am not entrapped by... I am not hoodwinked into wanting a lot of junk and getting a job that gives me a lot of money for the junk and the fancy this and the expensive that and clothes that change every year. Why? When they're still just as good last year. I've never whined to my husband for anything, really, material. It's by the book we want. It's by the records we want. It's by the leechy nuts. Silly things like that. Not fashionable things to want. We want what we want.
What shapes attitudes like these?
What shapes my life the most markedly? It wasn't the Great Wars, and it wasn't the Holocausts in all continents, because looking over history, there have always been wars. There always would be the benign and the belligerent. Wasn't it Mark Twain who said that? Always! The thing that really terrified me, and I'm sure I was only 11 at the time, possibly 12, a social studies teacher that wanted desperately to be a chicken farmer. And I got out of him one day during the noon period. Why weren't you a chicken farmer? Don't you know how? He said, certainly. He'd been raised on a chicken ranch. And why not? Well, it seems that he'd met at college a girl who was going to major in teaching, and he decided to marry her, so he went along too, and she didn't want to be a chicken rancher's wife. She wanted to be a teacher, and there you are. Someone forced into a life he did not want, for whatever reason. There's never a good reason. That's what terrified me. It was the personal issue of living. It's the everyday living that we're faced the most with, and it's the most important job. It's everything we've got. It's all we've got.
Like, I don't want to know from nothing, man. This cat Morpheus reached out his hand. I greased his palm with lonely oil. That's what started the pot to boil. Don't bug me, baby, cook. Like, you don't need to preach no sermons, Dad. I'm just a down and melancholy lad who walked the straight and narrow once till life made me a natural dunce, crazy, blow. Talk to me, baby, talk to me. Dig, man, I was gone on this gassy chick, but she used me, abused me, played me for a trick. Yeah, I slapped her down, pushed her around. She called the fuzz, and I split out of town. Like, wow. Mm-hmm. like. How you gonna sound about this greasy bag gig? That's for a horse, a square, or a fatted pig. 30 years of gold watch and youth has flown. Got enough wrinkles in your forehead there to screw your natural skull cap on. Wail on, man. Yeah. So, man, like, don't bug me with this convention jazz. Don't resist, just exist the time away. Light up and wait for doomsday. Like, later. Much later, in fact, never.
Mr. Sandberg, as a sort of elder statesman of American literature, what do you think of this beatnik movement?
Well, there ought to be a beatnik movement at all times. I was part of a beatnik movement from 1915 to 1925, and I point to some of my pieces as a challenge to the modern beatniks.
But I think I'm gonna cut on out of this town, cause it's really bringing me down. Everything is all right here, but I don't know. I think I could have gone South Parkway and see what Rooty. I guess I better take the bus on downtown and grab the train and cut out since I have my ticket. It's really a drag. Well, the train is pretty crowded, but it's still rolling real mellow. Next stop is Detroit. I think I'll get off there. Detroit looks very mellow, very mellow. I think I'll jump on up on Adams Street and see what the cat's doing on St. Antoine. Bovian somewhere. I believe I want to go to Cleveland. Yeah, I'm gonna cut on out to Cleveland now. I had the traveling blues. I go out on Cedar Street there. Cedar's jumping. I think I better take me another train and cut on out of here and jump on into. I don't know. I think I'll stop in the Toledo.
In a torn nightgown, weeps by a dirty window. Jaws are punched in the streets. Cat is sick in the gutter. Dogs bark up nightbound alleys. There's nothing like the sorrow of the jukeboxes at dawn. Dice Girl, Going Home, Whores, Eating Chop Suey, Pimps, Eat Chili Mac, Drowsy, Flat Feet, Ham and Eggs, Dawn of Labor, Dawn of Life. The awakening, noises of the old sacrifices, the snow blows down the bare street, ahead of the first streetcar. The lovers light cigarettes and part with burning eyes. Daylight.
Jazz, the place is roaring, all beautiful girls in there, one mad brunette at the bar, drunk with her boys, one strange chick I remember from somewhere, wearing a simple skirt with pockets, her hands in there, short haircut, slouched, talking to everybody. Up and down the stairs they come, the bartenders and the regular band of Jack and the heavenly drummer who looks up in the sky with blue eyes, with a beard. He's wailing beer caps and bottles and jamming at the cash register, and everything is going to the beat. It's the beat generation, it's Bayat. It's the beat to keep, it's the beat of the heart. It's being beat and down in the world and like old-time lowdown. And like an ancient civilization, the slave boatmen rowing galleys to a beat. And servants spinning pottery to a beat. The faces. There's no face to compare with Jack Mingus, who's up on the bandstand now, and a colored trumpeter who outblows and wild and dizzy, but Jack's face overlooking all the heads and smoke. He has a face that looks like everybody you've ever known and seen on the street in your time. A sweet face, hard to describe. Sad eyes, cool lips, expectant gleam, swaying to the beat, tall, majestical. Waiting in front of the drugstore. A face like Hunky's in New York. Hunky, whom you'll see on Times Square, somnolent and alert. Sad, sweet, dark, holding, just out of jail. Martyred, tortured by sidewalks. Starved for sex and companionship. Open to anything. Ready to introduce a new world, shrug. Colored big tenor with the big tone is blowing sunny stits clear out of Kansas City roadhouses. Clear, heavy, somewhat dull and unmusical ideas which nevertheless never leave the music. Always there, always far out. The harmony too complicated for the motley bums of music understanding in there. But the musicians here. The drummer is a sensational 12-year-old Negro boy who's not allowed to drink, but can play. Tremendous, a little lithe, childlike Miles Davis kid. Like early Fats Navarro fans you used to see in Espan, Harlem, hep, small. He thunders at the drums with a beat which is described to me by a near-standing connoisseur with beret as a fabulous beat. On piano is Blondie Bill, good enough to drive any group. Now Jack Minger blows out and over his head with these angels from Fillmore. I dig him, now he's terrific. I just stand in the outside hall against the wall, no beer necessary, with collections of in-and-out listeners, with Bernie, and now here returns Bob Berman, who was a kid from West Indies, who barged into my party 6 months earlier with Dean and the gang, and I had a Chet Baker record on, and we hoofed it at each other in the room. Tremendous. The perfect grace of his dancing, casual, like Joe Louis, casually hoofing. He comes now in dancing like that, glad. Everybody looks everywhere. It's a jazz joint and beat generation mad trick. You see someone, hi. Then you look away elsewhere for something, someone else. It's all insane. Then you look back, you look away, around. Everything is coming in from everywhere in the sound of the jazz.
sudden. A spontaneous moan. Sun hypnotic, holy ball, protracted, long and sure. Fiery goblet, they babble. Sun webbed heat, tropic goblet dry. Spider thirst, sun on water. Sun misery, sun air, sun sick, sun dead, sun rot, sun relic. Sun over Afric sky, low and tipped, spilt, almost empty. Hollow vial, sun bone, sun stone, iron sun, sundial. Sun dinosaur, electric motion, extinct and fossil, Babylon. Sun, season of the sea sun, catching actual sunfish on the green shore, sunbathing like a madness. Sun Eros, Hellas, superreal conglomeration of miasmatic ire. Sun, sundown, leaves in desert, life astounded, go down. Sun Circus, tent of Helion, Apollo, Raw, Sol, Sun Exalt. The sun like a blazing ship went down until it Telepigian Lake. The sun like a blazing disk of jelly slid over the Telepigian Alps. The sun leaves the night and follows the night and leaves the night. The sun can be chariot driven. The sun like a blazing lollipop can be sucked. The sun is shaped like a curved beckoning finger. The sun spins, walks, dances, skips, runs. The sun favors palms, citrus, the Berkeley lungs. The sun eats up Telepigian Lake and Alps every rising. The sun does not know what it is to like or dislike. The sun all my life went down and came up. Oh, constant hole, though all beyond is true by me.
The Sound of Photography from Charles Wilp Studio Penthouse. Selections from Beautiful Bald Woman, Bunny, Powder Puff, Nancy for Soft Ice, Busy Bee, Purple Playmate, Pink Carpet, Close Up, Silky Stockings, Size 79, 55, 91, Red Indian Siren, and Christmas Cover. Thank you.
Now whenever life looks dark and mean, I have myself an espresso. And then I sort of sit back, man, and like dig the scene, maybe have myself another espresso. And you know there's a chick in the coffee shop who's caught my eye, but she never talks to me when I fall by. So I sit there and I cool it and I'm oh so sly, and I have myself another espresso. Now last night I decided to do the thing as I had myself another espresso. And I asked that chick, like, would she care to swing as I had myself another espresso? And she said, baby, like, that's cool with me, but like, man, I can't split till 3:30, so why don't you just sit down and cool it and like wait for me and maybe have yourself another espresso. You know, I never cared much for formal dates. I just sit and have myself an espresso, man, you know? But like, man, if a chick is a groove, then baby, you gotta wait. Maybe have yourself another espresso. Yeah, so like I took off my coat, man, and I hung up my hat. And for the next 5 hours right there I sat. You know, that chick went home with some other cat, so I have myself another espresso. Now the moral of this story I'll tell you, man, is I have myself another espresso. It's always follow the ways of Zen and have yourself another espresso. And whenever life has got you way uptight, why baby, just sit back and groove until everything's right. Cause you know I met another chick that very night, and well, as a matter of fact, I guess we just sat around and had another espresso.
Have you ever been hungry in the middle of the night? That happens to me sometimes. And then I go raid the icebox. For example, the other night I did that. We had some leftover Welsh rarebit. I found that and a couple of crackers and a piece of celery and an olive. And I sat down in the middle of the night. I was very, very hungry. Oh, it tasted so good. You have no idea what it means sometimes in the middle of the night when you're hungry like this. And you have a little something to tide you over till breakfast. It's one of my bad habits, actually. I shouldn't be up like this. But I get so hungry. It's silly to say this, but I look at a little olive like this. And it tastes wonderful. This has got a seed in it, but I like them pitted too. And you don't have to worry about the stone. I swear I do this practically every night of the week. Oh, not every night, but pretty near. I keep worrying that I'm gonna get fat. So, that's good celery. Cracker. I wonder if the other end of the celery tastes good. Top end tastes as good as the bottom end. I think I'll eat the leaves. Why not? Well, guess I made my plate clean. Well, put this in the sink. Maybe I better wash it up. And I just leave it there. Now to go back to sleep. I sure can get hungry at night.
Here we have a cafe in a little California beach town, or an identical cafe in Vancouver, BC, or an identical cafe in Marseille, or an identical cafe in Tokyo. And here are people in beards and bare feet busy sitting around writing poetry. Well, these people are simply status seekers. This is a struggle for in-group prestige. It fulfills all the definitions that the sociologists have elaborated to take care of the most conventional and most commercialized behavior.
Now, recently down in the basement of our building here, we uncovered, much to our dismay, a group of some 8 or 9 pads, which have been little apartments, which have been made up in the storage vaults. These were covered with wonderful Japanese mats and burlap on the walls and had hibachi stoves and modern paintings and candelabra. It was rather touching to look at the books on the shelves. If you'd broken into similar subterranean pads during the 30s, they would all been books on Marxism and capitalism and political books. But these were all theological books, almost all of them. Books on Zen Buddhism and early Christian mystics and the Apocrypha. Books of this sort. I think that the prevalent preoccupation in North Beach has been with religion, the quality of life whereby you stake your life on what you consider to be holy, to be the ultimate good. And while a few people here stake their life on it totally, they do it more so than elsewhere, where if when the chips are down, I think people would always choose their car over God.
As man makes you, and you're no crueler than cancer. All man hates you. They'd rather die by car crash, lightning, drowning, falling off a roof, electric chair, heart attack, old age, or bomb. They'd rather die by anything but you. Death's finger is freelance, not up to man whether you boom or not. Death has long since distributed its categorical blue.
The individual has a tougher time these days than he had in the 19th century because they start right out in school training us not to be individuals. Our kids go to school and the teacher says, little Johnny is very bright. He reads perhaps too well. But he hasn't yet learned to adjust himself to the group. She never asks whether it's a good group or a bad group. The duty of little Johnny is to adjust. Then he gets out of school and goes into business. And never before have there been such great rewards for adjusting yourself to the organization. Used to give them little things. Now they give them ranch houses, free cars in every garage, winter vacations in Nassau, everything else, if you adjust. If you don't adjust, then the personnel man calls you in and says to you, I see that you're not happy here at the bank company. Perhaps you'd better look for some place where you fit in better with the group. In the 1930s, people's activities were turned outside towards the side. They neglected what was inside. It was always, we can be saved by a change in society. We are changing the world. The world will get better on account of our efforts. In the 1960s, if you try to break inside what people are thinking, you'll find them saying, the world is going to hell in a hack. Society is all bad. There's nothing we can do to change it. We're absolutely powerless except on one point. We can become meaningful individuals.
We can become meaningful individuals. Mr. Cowley's analysis has much in common with those of other keen social observers. If the objective of the Cool Rebellion is to make it possible for the preservation of individuality in what John Galbraith has termed the affluent society, then few of us will say it nay. We can, however, ask ourselves, where lies responsibility for this revolt against our style of life? Most of the people we have listened to this evening have discussed war, materialism, the increasing pace of the rat race as being basic to their disaffiliation from contemporary mores. Although a good many of the statements of the discussion have been extreme, there is perhaps a grain of truth in the overall protest. We owe it to ourselves and to the progress which we have made in the past to see to it that material prosperity is intertwined with individual freedom, with spiritual aspiration. To be aware of the possibility of the loss of individuality is the first step in making sure we treasure it as the most important part of our heritage. Only then can we preserve the valuable harvest reaped over the past 50 years by the hidden revolution.
Free thinkers and free lovers, riding the crest of a turbulent tide, scanning the distant horizon where reality and illusion become Siamese twins. Frantic, frustrated women grabbing stolen moments of bliss. Greedy, eager beavers with octopus arms getting richer and closer to the grave. Good time girls and would-be pimps, chippies and tea-heads cruising the main stem. Second-story men and three-time losers, whores and neurotic valedictorians. He, she's, and she, he's. Rebellion. The throbbing, surging rhythm of life's misunderstood few cuts through countless barriers of doubt, leaving in its wake a gaping wound where the outsider is turned inside out. Is there no ground called sanctuary? A jumping off place where the confused and the lonely disembark to seek momentary utopian dreams? Who then shall judge? Who can say? Children, stop your questions, cease your searching, quell the raging storm inside your soul, slay the waking giant curiosity. Would thou be Moses and lead this troubled flock to the promised land? Like a kick in the rump, society thrusts convention into our open hands and is shocked to find our behavior is much like that of an ungrateful child forced to accept a substitute toy for Christmas. Rebellion.
My man, here I am sitting in this crazy cafe. But like, I'm not gonna sit here long. Not with these crazy sounds sending me way out. Black. man. Don't just stand there. Let's make it. You move it, man.
Queen on the Black King. There is no color line in games. Chrysanthemums in autumn, violets in spring. Slip the red ace behind the Black King.
Sprung you loose, didn't I?
It's Uncle Icky. Just follow orders and make the scene like I told you. That'll be the most in life, man. Bigger than the biggest kicks the most.
When?
Tonight. Tonight you better be with it.
Well, look, man, I am trying, but my outer soul just won't reach my inner soul, you know?
Yes, your baby knows Matilda.
told old King Tut, say if you can't say rebop, keep your big mouth shut. Hey, mop, rebop.
Hey, mop, rebop.
Hey, mop, rebop.
Hey, mop.
Cot. Baby's on the floor blowing his natural top, singing, hey, bop, rebop.
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 Yes, your baby
It seems, since the beginning of time, I have waited for someone just like you. And then you came along. Darling, I will never forget the time I first looked into the depths of your beautiful eyes. Something was born in that enchanted moment that can never die. It had its birth in the springtime of your radiant smile. New death and heartbreak, sometimes by your indifferent attitude. But thank God, always found its resurrection and complete fulfillment in the wonder of your loving arms. Darling, for you shall never know the pain of birth. For when that moment comes, I shall take you into the cradle of my arms and hold you so close. And when you shall hear the gentle crying of our little child against your breast, how deep then will be the significance of life, for we will have known that our blood is mingled and goes on in the veins of a poet. When we are dust. Yes, that's my love for you. As certain as eternity, as everlasting as the stars.
Art has run into choppy weather in our town of late. The Metropolitan Museum had to close one day a week because of lack of funds. Shakespeare got chased out of Central Park because our park commissioner said all those people were eroding the soil. But the pen is still mightier than the sword, or even the billy club. The Greenwich Village poet may be beat, but he is unbeaten and shall prevail. The poets in the Greenwich Village coffee houses have won their battle against the lawgivers, the cops, and the squares. The coffee houses, like the Gaslight here in McDougal Street, are still operating without what might be called their poetic license. And the poets, the beat and conventional alike, are still filling the night with smoky blank verse. Edgar Guest would be a little uncomfortable here amid the espresso cups and the blank expression, but there are heroes on McDougal Street. One of them is William Morris.
I'll read a poem called Lyric for Children. Fashioned of moons who have soft color, in puppy dogs' tails and breadcrumbs on water, in the silver blue of the mothering sea, with a song that has no words, but only cries at the heavens' watch. Of purity and the words of prophets, that is true even when false. I say, do not run from armies that have not the sincerity.
Now we'll have to, like, fall back uptown to CBS News.
Sitting there yakking right in my face. I guess I'm gonna have to put you in your place. You know, if silence was golden, you couldn't raise a dime. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime. You quoting figures and dropping names. You're telling stories about the dames. You're over laughing when things ain't funny. You're trying to sound like the big money. You know if talk was criminal, you'd lead a life of crime. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime. Life is short, talk is cheap. Don't be making promises that you can't keep. If you don't like this little song I'm singing, just grin and bear it. All I can say is if the shoe fits, wear it, and you must keep talking. Please try to make it rhyme. Because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
Poetry and jazz.
Psychopathia sexualis. I'm in love with a horse that comes from Dallas. Poor neurotica me. When my family found out, they raised the roof, 'cause I bought a ring to fit her hoof. Poor brain, the size of a pea. She looks so nice against the rail, with her pretty long legs and her ponytail. I guess against convention I'll never win. I'll probably end up in the loony bin, but in my heart I'll always be free. The head shrinker said my societal concept had been warped by an Oedipus Rex, which caused me to hate the opposite sex. But what he doesn't know is that my second wife was a 10-pound goose named Tex. I'm paranoid and sublimated, in love with a horse that ain't been spaded. Traumatic scene, please let me be. I've been hypnotized, tranquilized, analyzed, rationalized, taking every pill from Seconal to Dexamil. Sitting with my wife, necking in the dark, and knowing her ex-lovers are running at Hollywood Park. Can be a bug, I will admit, but it's all made up when I see her running around the house in a negligee, brace and bit. Like most young couples, we had our fights, deciding what's fair about her rights. We finally got adjusted, and I was boss, when I woke one morning, and on a lawn, I found a fiery cross. The Ku Klux Klan said we had to get out that day. Move everything, lock, stock, horse, and carriage. The Klan wouldn't stand for no mixed marriage, so I'm feeling blue. Ain't got a penny in my pocket. We're gonna volunteer for a satellite rocket, so me and her can sit and spoon and visit my first wife who jumped over the moon. Poetry and all that jazz.
Bop began with jazz. But one afternoon somewhere on a sidewalk, maybe 1939, 1940, Dizzy Gillespie or Charlie Parker or Thelonious Monk was walking down past a men's clothing store on 42nd Street of South Main in L.A., and from the loudspeaker they suddenly heard a wild and possible mistake in jazz that could only have been heard inside their own imaginary head, and that is a new art, bop. The name derives from an accident. America was named after an Italian explorer and not after an Indian king. Lionel Hampton had made a record called Hey Bobby Rebop, and everybody yelled it, and it was when Lionel would jump in the audience and wail his saxophone at everybody with sweat claps, jumping fools in the aisles, the drummer vastly booming and belaboring on the stage as the whole theater rocked. Sung by Helen Humes, it was a popular record and sold many copies around 1945 or 46. First everyone looked around, then it happened. Bop happened. The bird flew in. Minds went in. On the streets, thousands of new-type hep cats in red shirts and some goatees and strange queer-looking cowboys from the West with boots and belts. And the girls began to disappear from the street somehow. You no longer saw, as in the 30s, the Wrangler walking with his doll in the honky-tonk. Now he was alone. Rebop, bop, came into being because the girls were leaving the guys and going off to be middle-class models or something. And Dizzy or Charlie or Thelonious was walking down the street, heard a noise, a sound, half Lester Young, half raw rainy fog that has that chest shivering excitement of shack or track or empty lot, the sudden vast tiger head on the wood fence, rainy no school Saturday morning dump yards, hey, and rushed off dancing.
Now, most of you men are very choosy about the women that you meet. Now, sometimes it's their hair, and then again, sometimes it's the size of these chicks' big feet. But that ain't nothing to all the treasures these old ugly girls hold when with a wee bit of kindness, a New York man can cop all these ugly girls' gold. So if you know you a woman as huge as a grizzly bear, she ain't got no kind of shape and very burned out hair. Now this chick, she is so ugly that she is a pity to see. Well, give me her phone number, man, 'cause she is just right for me. And if you know of another girl that happens to be the skinniest babe in town, and when a July wind come easing by, you got to anchor this old babe down. And she is so dumb, she can't even count to 1, 2, 3. Well, I told you, my man, that she was meant for me. Now, I have majored in women. I have had all sorts of types. I have had the pure and the used. So you know I'm down with all the feminine hypes. But there's one thing sure, as a bee won't hem a wee taste of honey, is keep you an ugly girl stashed somewhere, and you will always have you some money. Well, I got me 25 of these old scarecrows. And folks, my wardrobe, you really ought to see. And my bank account's in 27 figures. So how straight do a guy need to be? But you know, sometimes I get embarrassed while I am walking down the street. 'Cause with a scarecrow on your arm, my man, you don't know who you just might meet. But really, folks, I'm not worried because my wallet is very much intact. And right outside, I got me parked a brand new fire engine red, pure Cadillac. So I'm gonna let all the fools in the squares have the glamour and let them flow show all the time. And just give me one good scarecrow, man, and I will always have mine.
One more poem while still in the while still blowing. The Sunflower Sutra. I walked on the banks of the tin can banana dock and sat down under the huge shade of a Southern Pacific locomotive to look at the sunset over the Box House Hills and cry. Jack Kerouac sat beside me on a busted, rusty iron pole companion. We thought the same thoughts of the soul, bleak and blue and sad-eyed, surrounded by the gnarled steel roots of trees of machinery. The oily water on the river mirrored the red sky. Sun sank on top of final Frisco peaks. No fish in that stream, no hermit in those mounts, just ourselves, roomy-eyed and hungover like old bums on the riverbank, tired and wily. Look at the sunflower, he said. It was a dead gray shadow against the sky, big as a man, sitting dry on top of a pile of ancient sawdust. I rushed up, enchanted. It was my first sunflower. Memories of Blake, my visions, Harlem, and hells of the eastern rivers, bridges clanking Joe's greasy sandwiches, dead baby carriages, black treadless tires forgotten and under-treaded, the poem of the riverbank, condoms and pots, steel knives, nothing stainless, only the dank muck and the razor-sharp artifacts passing into the past, and the gray sunflower poised against the sunset, crackly, bleak, and dusty, with a smut and smog and smoke of olden locomotives in its eye, corolla of bleary spikes pushed down and broken like a battered crown, seeds fallen out of its face, soon to be toothless, mouth of sunny air, Sun rays obliterated on its hairy head like a dried wire spider web. Leaves stuck out like arms out of the stem. Gestures from the sawdust root. Broke pieces of plaster falling out of the black twigs. A dead fly in its ear. Unholy, battered old thing you were. My sunflower, oh my soul, I loved you then. The grime was no man's grime, but death in human locomotives. All that dress of dust, that veil of darkened railroad skin, that smog of cheek, that eyelid of black misery, that sooty hand of phallus, no protuberance of artificial worse than dirt, industrial, modern, all that civilization spotting your crazy golden crown, and those clear thoughts of death and dusty, loveless eyes and ends and withered roots below, in the home pile of sand and sawdust, rubber dollar bills, skin of machinery, the guts and innards of the weeping, coughing car, the empty, lonely tin cans with their rusty tongues alack. What more could I name? The smoked ashes of some cock cigar, the cunts of wheelbarrows and the milky breasts of cars, all these entangled in your mummy roots. And you there, standing before me in the sunset, all your glory in your form, a perfect beauty of the sunflower, a perfect, excellent, lovely sunflower existence, the sweet natural eye to the new hip moon, woke up alive and excited, grasping in the sunset, shadow, sunrise, golden monthly breeze. How many flies buzz around you, innocent of your grime, while you curse the heavens of the railroad and your flower soul? Poor dead flower, when did you look, when did you forget you were a flower? When did you look at your skin and decide you were an impotent, dirty old locomotive? The ghost of a locomotive, the specter and shade of a once powerful, mad American locomotive. You were never no locomotive, sunflower. You were a sunflower. And you, locomotive, you were a locomotive. Forget me not. So I grabbed up the skeleton thick sunflower and stuck it at my side like a scepter to deliver my sermon to my soul and Jack's soul too and anyone who'll listen. We're not our skin of grime. We're not dread, bleak, dusty, imageless locomotive. We're beautiful sunflowers inside, blessed by our own seed, and golden, hairy, naked, accomplishment bodies, growing into mad, black, formal sunflowers in the sunset, spied on by our eyes, under the shadow of the mad locomotive, riverbank, sunset, Frisco, hilly, tin can, evening, sit-down vision.